Hello and welcome to Loopholes, your weekly esoterotic chat between two great folk here on wherever you're listening to it. My name is Ian Bolesworth, hello.
And I'm Kate Cheryl, hello.
And we are at episode 39.
Whoa.
That's 39. Getting close to 40. That's my maths for the day.
Well done. I mean, it's greater than any suggestions I could have made about the importance of 39. Very exciting. We're going to have a midlife crisis soon. We're going to buy a podcast motorbike.
Yeah, we're going to get some steps.
Yeah.
39 steps.
That's
one.
Very good. Yeah.
Also, I'm going to put this forward now straight away. It's very important. For episode 40, of course, the final episode. For episode 40, I thought what we could do is, do you know what? Would you be averse to having a break? Do you think it's worth us having a break at 40 episodes? Just like a few weeks off?
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Well, maybe that would give me time, personally, to work on my new side project,
yeah.
Which is a weekly podcast about whatever Yuri Geller's been up to, called Geller
right.
Watch.
I'm not going to be involved with that. But I will say to the listener right now, love it while you got it. Love it while you got it, mate.
Yeah.
Because already... Did you hear that? We've already been having chats. I mean, that was the first time I've mentioned it, but we've already been having chats about whether to have a break. And you know what happens with breaks? Sometimes it just carries on and that's the end of it. But for episode 40, which could be the final episode, of course. So for episode 40, it's occurred to me, 40 is a lot.
It is.
That's a lot of episodes. And I've never been allowed to be the main part of the episode. It's always you with all your research. I've never been allowed to bring something myself.
I would be honoured and relieved if you would bring a topic.
Now, the issue we have is I don't believe in any of it at all.
Yeah.
And I get quite impatient with it as well. But I have thought, because I do have an interest in it, I just hate it, that potentially I could talk about next week my esoterotic loving, which is The Haunted Mansion.
What? Just in time for the new film to be released, so we're relevant?
The new, that would be right, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to see a preview copy of the new film.
Yes.
So as far as I'm concerned, it's already been released. But I can say on the record now, I won't be talking about the new film.
Okay.
This is about... the other aspects of it, the original attraction.
Yes.
And esoteric things therein. And I don't just mean things that were made. I mean actual esoteric things reported therein.
I'm totally on board for that.
Even if you weren't, I'm going to do it anyway. So
Thank
the comments
you.
From last week, I'm going to do mine first, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
We have Annette Truby. Annette Truby is basically doing an advert to say for people to vote for Loopholes in an awards thing. Just fine, you can if you want. I shan't be attending, and I think you're potentially flogging a dead horse there, but it's a very kind idea. Paul Rawlings, fantastic episode again. Hope your blood pressure has come back down again. Not really. I'm fascinated by the idea of the moment when a fraud is publicly revealed in an instant, such as when the lights are turned on in a seance. It's not about seeing someone brought down. I actually feel sorry for the fraud in that moment. Oh, Paul, you mustn't. It's more the unique weirdness of the moment and the way that for some people, their whole view of what is happening changes in an instant. One moment they're surrounded by ghosts blowing down floating trumpets, etc. Then in the next moment the room is lit up, there's strings everywhere, and some guy in a moderately priced Abe Lincoln costume is running out of the room. Must be very jarring to be there when such a thing happens. Do you have a favourite sudden exposure of a fraud?
Oh.
Not like that. I presume that's for you, Kate. I don't know.
Do I ever?
Yeah, I don't know of any... sudden exposures of a fraud. I mean, there are a few that I am waiting for, but they're nothing to do with these esoteric things.
Right, okay. Well, I do. I'm so glad someone has finally asked.
Yeah.
If only they'd asked for my top five.
You're allowed one. He just does very clearly say, do you have a favourite?
Right, well, I'm giving you one and a half. I would normally say...
Whoa.
Let me continue, please. For I am the woman. So,
Wow.
I would normally go.
Wow. You know you're on a hide into nothing when you're having to bring out the chivalry card.
Yeah. I would normally say, oh, it's Florence Cook, it's the Volkman exposure. Because Florence Cook was an incredibly famous child medium, of, you know, young female medium of the 19th century.
Right.
Superstar medium, was exposed when there was meant to be a ghost walking around the seance. Turns out, once you grab the ghost, it was rather more corporeal, and it turned out to be Florence Cook in a sheet, more or less.
Right.
Rather than Katie King, who was supposed to be walking around the room. But generally, when it comes
what
to
what was Florence's reaction, though, when that happened? Is that lost to history, or do we know what happened?
No. It's very well documented. It made front cover of many magazines, most of which I have framed around my house.
And what was it?
She was very, very distressed.
Yeah.
But because the sitters were a mixture of believers and those who were going out to reveal her for their own benefit as well.
Yeah.
Because Volkman, who is always called the Volkman exposure, he ultimately married Agnes Guppy Volkman, who was also a medium, and I would say Florence's rival, but she was a fascinating and horrible woman who kind of conspired to attack her. So no one in it is faultless. Everyone in it is doing things for their own benefit. But yeah, she was the ghost, shall I say, was terrified and deeply distressed as a young girl, dressed in basically her night clothes and a bit of a sheet would be. And she rushed back into the cabinet where the medium was supposed to be trussed up. And they gave her a few minutes for the ghost to calm down, and then they found the medium there, Florence Cook, rather than Katie King the ghost, very distressed, but back in her chair as she should have been, and that happened a couple of times. She was caught,
and they just let that go, did they?
Well, the second time I'd rather
oh, she's back in the chair now. It's not off ground tick.
The first time it was a great imposture, and the second right. time, and then she kind of, she went all right for a bit, but yeah, the second time she was manifesting a different spirit who was dancing round in her negligee, which is very, very scandalous. And that's when they pulled back the curtain of the spirit cabinet where the medium was supposed to be, revealing that Florence Cook wasn't there and she was, in fact, the spirit dancing round in her knickers. But I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say it was Eva Carrier who made ectoplasm out of chewed up bits of paper and bribed a coachman to pretend to be a 300-year-old Brahmin Hindu who appeared through a trapdoor in a seance room. But that's just giving you options.
And what was the moment of exposure there? What happened?
There was an excellent article from 1906 which kind of recounted her seances and how this coachman called Oreski had been bribed by the medium to play the part of her spirit guide, a 300-year-old Brahmin Hindu called Bien Boa. And he came out and said, no, I've been paid, and I come into the seance room via a trapdoor.
So what happened then? When that was revealed, what was the outcome of that?
Oh, scandal. Absolute scandal. I mean, she did continue in dribs and drabs because she was an incredibly controversial woman. But she was one who, I mean, she did X-rated seances.
Right.
So for all of the chewed up paper and this is a ghost, actually, it's a member of the royal family cut out from a newspaper. You know, she made her own ghost. It was very Blue Peter. But she would also run around the seance room naked.
I mean, it sounds like it was very blue everything.
And demand to have full gynecological examinations.
No wonder she was Teflon then. People going to them and be like, I don't care if it's a ghost or not.
I mean, you would, wouldn't you? You would go.
You know this isn't real. I'm not bothered. I was thinking, throwing forward to my special next week, I was thinking that when Paul said that about the moment, the unique weirdness of the moment, people surrounded by ghosts blowing down floating trumpets, then in the next moment the room's lit up, there's strings everywhere. And that actually, the thing I thought of when I was reading that was, again, the Haunted Mansion, which I'll be discussing at length next week, when the ride breaks down. Now, on the times that I've been on the Haunted Mansion, it's never broke down as in irreparably. So it pauses a lot, the Haunted Mansion, as you're going round, because they're getting people on in the loading bay who have mobility issues. That's why it pauses so much. Sometimes you can go right through without it pausing at all. But the reason when it pauses, the reason for that is normally because of they're loading people on. But sometimes there's problems and the ride's shut down and they evacuate the ride. And I've seen that a few times on YouTube. They call it lights on, is what they call it, when they have to evacuate a ride. And basically, as it says, all the lights come on. And there is, like, even when I watch them on YouTube, I always think, turn it off, Ian. Don't watch it. This is ruining it. Turn it off.
Yeah.
Because suddenly you've got everything exposed. Now, I know the Haunted Mansion isn't haunted. I know that the things floating around aren't floating at all. But when you see it stark, it kills the magic, stone dead. It really does. But that moment of seeing it, that jarring moment...
It's like suddenly ripping the plaster off, isn't it? It's that moment of disassociating from your... imagined reality for a moment. Yeah.
I also quite like those moments.
Yeah.
You know when Paul said, I feel sorry for them? I know what Paul means by that. That's an empathy streak, that is.
Yes.
But I enjoy watching those things. I enjoy watching on YouTube people getting caught doing things.
Oh, you do. You really do.
Where you see their life drop out of their pants immediately.
Yeah.
And I like that moment.
Yeah.
It's schadenfreude, isn't it? Ultimately, is what that is.
Yeah.
You're kind of taking pleasure in the discomfort of somebody else.
Yeah, I suppose so when you feel it's justified discomfort, like through...
Yeah.
I'm reticent to use the word deserve, but they've almost brought themselves to that situation through nefarious or exploitative means or, you know, however you see it. Yeah. It's satisfying.
So with... mediums and spiritualists, they deserve all they get.
Oh.
I'd love to be in the room. I'd love to go, oh! Oh, look what you're doing! Like I've been saying, that's what you're doing for ages! Nick Johnson, please allow me to apologise for my shameful use of the word esoteric instead of the correct word esoterotic. In my last comment to the show, I take full responsibility for my actions and throw myself upon the mercy of the Loopholes Court. I promise it will never happen again. I hope Ian has recovered from the stress he put himself through during the last episode. Great show as always. Thank you, Nick. We're a very forgiving bunch over here. We really are. Just do not do it again. Nothing further, Your Honour. Charlotte, I sincerely hope that future ghost e-scooters aren't caught on a loop.
Oh, they absolutely will be.
I don't think I know what an e-scooter is.
It's one of those things you can rent in city centres, isn't it? And nip around
on. I don't know. I don't go out.
I've never used one because a friend of mine was quite brutally mangled on one. So I doubt you'll ever see me zipping about on one.
Not mangled. Come on, get with the kids. It's mashed when you're on an e.
Oh, right.
Alice Norton, I forgot my comment was posted just before a 2-week gap. It was in reference to the psychic who had apparently been contacting someone who was completely alive when they were supposed to be dead. I think we worked that out, didn't we? Eventually.
Yeah.
The special catchphrase... Oh, that's because Alice was going to imagine a phrase for me to pick up psychically on a certain day. And the special catchphrase was, smoke me a kipper, I'll be back for breakfast, which is from Red Dwarf. I can say that on the day you mentioned that you were going to do that, nothing could have been further from my mind. So
no, but it's a good go.
So, well, your psychic vibrations did not come through, I'm afraid. And last one on mine, Michael Oatmilk. My partner is teaching Gothic literature to undergraduates. I have started incepting her with the word Draclia to see if I can get her to accidentally say it in one of the seminars. We'll let you know if it works. Please do.
Yeah, Michael. Yeah, of course, yeah. Undergrads love Bram Stoker, author of Draclia.
Draclia.
Yeah.
I would consider, for all the things that I would like to express within Loopholes and all the things that I would like to throw a light into the shadows of, I would still consider the success of that quest to be my greatest achievement.
Okay.
If they all start referring to it as Draclia, I'd be delighted. Absolutely delighted.
That is your legacy.
What I want to hear about, Michael, is any, again, this might be schadenfreude a little bit, any rows that come from this with your partner. Anything like, stop saying that. Any date night where it all just caves in and she starts screaming at you saying, stop saying that because I'm going to say it in a class. I want to hear the real repercussions of it.
Yeah. Please. And when that does happen, because it's Gothic literature, do move on to Frankenstein.
Because some people pronounce it Frankenstein, don't they?
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. Okay.
On to your comments.
Okay. Well, on my comments, lots and lots of lovely birthday messages. So thank you all very much, including a horrid one from Ian Boldsworth,
right,
who said, the big 4-0, have a brilliant birthday. Yeah. Yeah, no, not having that. So thank you.
Do you feel bad about being 40?
Is it bothering 40. I don't have enough money set aside for a motorbike yet. I can't be 40.
Oh, okay.
And then Annette Truby said that she voted for Loopholes in the People's Choice Award of the British Podcast Awards and popped the link there. So feel free. It's open till the 5th of September. You're probably listening to it after that.
It's pointless,
but maybe we just want you to post on social media.
I would rather you spent your time just saying something publicly or whatever, like that.
Say something tweetable.
I'm not bothered if you do or not.
Yeah.
But if you're going to invest some time on your computer, don't do it on someone else's thing, their awards thing. Do it. I'd rather be lone wolves. Like, I really would.
Yeah.
So I'd rather us as a gang, including the listener, I'd rather us just promote it ourselves and do it ourselves, rather than fingers crossed for something that is either going to be, you know, swayed in a certain direction anyway, or just pointless vote-wise. So, yeah, that's my take. But you can do both. You can do whatever you want. I'm fine with you doing what you want.
Yeah, your task for this week is on social media rather than voting.
But you don't need to do that either.
Oh, do we not?
Don't need to do that either. No. God,
why can't we ever give out homework?
Because they're listening and I'm happy with that.
Oh, well, you're right. That is lovely. Thank you very much for listening. You're very nice.
And I also like that there are certain people that would like this who don't get to hear it because they've not applied themselves and not bothered listening to it. Yeah. I like that. I'm wired differently to other people.
Yeah. Paul Rawlings said, happy birthday. Another brilliant episode as always. With all the different musical instruments that got played in seances back in the day, did anyone ever make a spirit orchestra / band? Sounds like a golden opportunity for Simply and the King to get back on stage.
Right, okay.
I think you're damn right there, Paul. I think it's about time Simply and the King came back from their extended stay in Centre Parks and came back to the wonderful spectral musical world that we live in.
Maybe, but I mean, I know that Paul is saying that tongue in cheek, not about Simply and the King, but about the Spectral Orchestra. Yeah, I know you well enough to know that if there's something even remotely like it, you will know about it.
Yeah, well, you know that I've been working. I've got several very large projects going on at the minute that are research-based projects. One of them is to do with spirit music, and that involves...
I've just been tidying.
A lot of trawling through periodicals.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there are many instances of, as we've said before, people channeling great composers, but that's mainly through one instrument.
Yeah.
People like Rosemary Brown, who just focus on the piano, for example. But in seances, I've seen a maximum of 3, maybe, instruments played at once by spirit hands. But also people who have written widely on when they have travelled to other spectral realms and have visited different spheres that were like music spheres and where there are heavenly orchestras.
Oh,
so there's quite a lot written about that. And also people who have channeled these heavenly pieces that are written for multiple instruments and then have written those down and performed them.
Yeah.
So there were a few instances of, I think it was a piece called Ruth.
Right.
That was performed in the reports. It seems like it was a bit like a school orchestra production of Cats or something.
Okay.
Sounded a little bit ropey, but those things have been, let's say, channeled and then performed.
Right.
But not many orchestras, to my knowledge, that were directly heard.
So there's not much reporting of singing wakes or jamborees.
Not many spectral jamborees. I mean, how many instruments makes a jamboree?
The knell of a requiem bell could be in there, I suppose.
Right, I know what you're doing now.
What?
Slipping in Haunted Mansion references?
Just think, there must be occasion where grim grinning ghosts have come out to socialise, surely. Maybe I'll tell you about it next week.
Yes, maybe you will.
There's a spectral orchestra in there.
Yeah.
All singing. Singing busts, in fact. Yeah.
That's a little bit mucky, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yes, there was a lot of emphasis placed on music in spiritualism, because of course you have spiritualist hymnals and so forth. and The Spiritual Liar, the collection of songs, things like that. PJ says, I don't have much time for people who claim they can talk to God or dead people or have theories that let them absolutely know the future. Mm. And in that I include politicians, philosophers and religious leaders, as well as the usual esoterotic merchants. It usually involves some sort of exploitation and folk on a power trip. That said, I do think psychic communication between living people and animals could be real, but just not as yet explained by science. The scientist and author Rupert Sheldrake is prone to a fair bit of woo-woo at times, but he has a theory he calls morphic resonance to attempt to explain telepathy. I think this theory is completely rejected by science, like much of his later woo-woo stuff, but that said, I do think it's an area worth serious research. Problem is, there's been so much quackery in esoterotic research that it's basically career-ending for any scientist to seriously investigate the field.
Mm. I mean, I'm rather predictably, I don't buy it. I don't think people are in tune psychically or telepathically. I don't think that's a thing. And I think often that could be... You could draw a line directly from that on pareidolia. Sometimes things are made into being... Well, that's inarguable, isn't it, that happened? We were both thinking the same thing. Finish each other's sentences and all that sort of stuff. Or, I was just thinking about you when you answer the phone and all that sort of business. I just don't... that just lies in coincidence to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I wouldn't even take it as far as coincidence because I wouldn't even see the link. I don't even see it as unusual.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody's ringing you up, there's a decent chance you're thinking about them at different times in the day when they're not there already. Ergo, there's a decent chance of them calling when you happen to be thinking about them. And again, that gets stretched sometimes if you've not heard from someone for a long time and suddenly they call you and you're like, oh, I was thinking about you only the other day. But, you know, I think it's a natural human response that to things that are claimed to be unusual that actually aren't unusual, and you make them feel more unusual. When someone dies, how many people go, oh, I only saw him yesterday.
Mm.
I only saw him in supermarket yesterday.
Yeah.
And then they die the next day, as if there's any tangible link. As if that means anything.
Yeah.
They have to be somewhere.
Yeah, I suppose.
Unless it's the invisible man who died.
Yeah, I think I am fascinated by the potentials of psychic links and stuff. But I think within that, the last time that maybe it could have been a serious part of like a high-up scientist or a high-up researcher's portfolio, should we say, would kind of be, what should we say, 60s, 70s, 80s, when you get things like Project Stargate, Men Who Stare at Goats, that sort of thing, where the American CIA tried to sort of exploit the potentials of psychic phenomena and mind readers to get a cheap radar system.
Do you think the military are bored a lot of the time?
I don't know
because
if they're
bored.
There
was a huge amount of all this with the Nazis as well, wasn't there? There was like a huge amount of
Yes, there was a lot of occult stuff, a lot of hallucinogenics, things like that, yeah.
Interested in all that sort of ethereal stuff.
Mm.
And of course, obviously, how it could be weaponized as well.
Yeah, well, that's ultimately what it all boils down to is, you know, in the military, it was psychic spies.
I think they're just bored.
So, yeah, I don't know what its actual uses would be if we all mastered telepathy. It would probably be for something incredibly mundane, ultimately, by the end of it.
Oh, really? Telepathy is like people sending each other's texts and stuff, isn't it? We're already able to do that, to send your secret thoughts to someone else. You just have to use a device.
Yeah, but at least psychically, you have got end-to-end encryption. So, So, you know, maybe more scientists should pursue it.
I think they're just bored. I think when you've done a lot of killing and stuff and you've been in these very extreme situations, you need something more for your buzz. That's what I think.
There's always aliens.
I actually sort of do think that.
Yeah.
I think when you've been, when it's normal to be in the darker recesses of extremities within existence.
Yeah.
When that becomes normalised within your life. So I mean, you see billionaires like jumping off mountains and stuff or going going into space or it's because it's like, well, I can't, nothing's touching the edges for me anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're heavily in the military and you've been in war zones and all that sort of thing and seen things that most people, thank heavens, never see, then you're probably like, what? What else is there? Yeah. What else can there be?
I'm going to kill livestock. Goat. Yeah.
Get me a goat now.
I'm going to kill livestock with my mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something for all of us to aim for.
No, it's not.
Oh, Simon Oram.
Get a PlayStation.
Simon Oram, cult travel agent, says, long-time listener, first-time emailer.
Hey, Simon.
Another cracking episode. Hi, Simon. Another cracking episode and one that I actually rewound. Is that still a thing? To make sure I was concentrating. Darwin has popped up a few times now. I get the impression he would be firmly sat on Ian's side of the fence in all of this. Wasn't aware of the events involving his daughter. Is there any scope for a full Darwin episode? Maybe an episode where Ian takes the reins completely and Kate becomes the Judge Judy and executioner. Also, happy belated birthday, Kate. I hope you had a lovely day. I did. Thank you very much, Simon.
I'm taking the reins in next week's episode, but it's nothing as lofty as Darwin. I'll be telling you about a Disney ride.
I suppose that there is quite a bit of scope to do with Darwin and spiritualism, but a lot of his, I wouldn't say interest in spiritualism, a lot of his experiences were with Alfred Russel Wallace, who we mentioned last week, who was the guy that just was a scientist, a peer of Darwin's, and really tried to pull him into that. But definitely, you know, there's more stuff that Darwin very strongly disliked to do with spiritualism.
Gonna do the Haunted Mansion.
But we have got the Haunted Mansion next week, so...
If I remember.
If you remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we ever do another episode, if you support us enough...
And we'll definitely do next week. We might do next week for definite.
But if there's one after that, we might do ghost sex. So it all depends on your support. Just hook them in like that. Come on.
We're doing the Haunted Mansion. Thank you.
Right, fine. Well, that's the end of my...
I don't want to build it up too much because it might not be interesting at all.
Well, that's the end of my comments.
Oh, brilliant. Well, let's crack on with the episode. Welcome to Loopholes episode 39. The penultimate episode, maybe. Hey, something's just occurred to me.
Yes?
How many comments did you have? I had 6 this week.
I think it was 14.
You won the comments.
Oh, we're still doing comments competitions.
Well, behind the scenes, but we can bring it forward. Yes, certainly. So you've won, not only have you won them, you've had a landslide victory there.
Oh, lovely.
I think there's mitigating circumstances for me, potentially.
Hmm.
You and I did quite a few podcasts on my Patreon in that week.
Yeah.
There was a lot of you and I because you helped me out because I was blind.
Yes.
So maybe people were just sick of hearing you and I together at that
point. Or maybe they thought, oh, she's so charming, she's wonderful, she...
It was just a big advert for
she
you.
She improves our lives. So they just thought, tell you what, you know, she needs our support.
Yeah. At what point would I have to recognise that it was all over? Would you point that out to me? Would you say, look, it's finished, Ian. It's over.
Look,
nobody wants you. It is over.
No one likes to admit... Someone is just better than them.
No, it's nothing
and
to
I'm
do
afraid
with you.
It's just me.
I don't. You must not misunderstand this.
Oh.
I do not have resentment of people doing fine or whatever. I don't even look.
I meant as a person.
I don't do left and right. I'm happy for you with your successes. Yes. I would be happy for anybody with their success. I don't go, well, that's not fair because I've not. I never do that. But for me... Just for me, would you tell me, would you say, look, they don't like you. Nobody wants your stuff anymore.
I would tell you very kindly. But
no, you don't say it kindly, you can just say it pragmatically and brutally. It's absolutely
But also,
fine.
Well, from what I've taken away from that is thank you for saying success without doing big air quotes when talking about me, which is very flattering.
At the moment, I'm a bit more consumed by my failures.
Well, don't worry, because we'll perk things right up with this week's discussion, which is lovely, because we've been quite medium-heavy recently, haven't we?
And about it, it's probably... Because you had Annette there in the comments doing something really positive and just being really nice, and my first reaction was, no, don't do that.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like you're just constantly reloading and shooting your own feet?
No, I don't. I think I'm a bit long in the tooth is what I think. So yeah. I think that over the years, I've seen things like awards and that sort of stuff come and go.
Mm.
And I'm a product of my history. And I do learn. So I've seen over the years how time's been unwisely invested in certain things where if you'd have done this instead, mm-hmm. you'd have done miles better.
But you know, it doesn't always have to be either or. Doesn't always have to.
No,
things,
well,
things
fair
can
enough,
just
yeah.
be nice things.
Yeah. No, fair enough. I've just apologised to Annette, haven't I?
I'm just putting the boot in a bit more.
Yeah, okay. Kicking on and down, thanks.
Yeah, right. So let's go and talk about a magical talking mongoose, all right?
Oh, you're not going to do Jeff the Mongoose, are
you? Yes, I am. So,
wow.
This week...
That's abuse. That is abuse. If someone's feeling low, like I appear to be feeling at the moment, that is abuse to take advantage of that.
No, it's... what is it? It's cheery. There
right,
we go.
Okay,
all positive things.
Can I chuck a caveat in straight away then?
Yeah.
I've discussed Jeff the Mongoose before. I definitely have. I can't remember a thing about what I said, like as in what my contribution to the discussion was. I've got no memory of it whatsoever. I remember the thing, I just don't remember what I said in return.
Right.
So,
well, it's a lovely story. And much like next week's projected Haunted Mansion special, there is a film...
I'll be dead by then.
There is a film due out about Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
Yeah.
Not sure when, but the trailer or some images have just cropped up. So we're ahead of the curve once more.
One way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it would be that both us and the film are way behind the curve.
Yeah.
I've got no concept of what the public wants.
Well, with that in mind, let's go back in time to September 1931. And we're going to the Isle of Man, where the Irving family were living at Cashin's Gap in Dalby. Now, the Irving family is James, or Jim Irving, Margaret, and Voiry. A name I've read several hundred times and have never thought to look up how it's pronounced.
It's pronounced Siobhan.
Good, well, I'm glad you've covered that. Right, so this starts off, as with all good spooky cases, with some light scratching. In the household, it's an old farmhouse. They started hearing scratchings and scrapes, sort of like weird scrabbly noises. And immediately, Jim thought, we've got a rat. So he started trying to implement any type of pest control he could think of. They laid rat traps. He did so many different things. He even tried... to growl like a dog to scare away whatever was making these scratching noises. But it turned
out... I had rats once and that did nothing.
Yeah. Well, it turned out that this creature just growled back. What he initially thought was a rat was something that then began to mimic his growls, mimic his animal calls when he started varying them, or would just do the calls when prompted.
And this is in the Isle of Man, this?
This is in the Isle of Man.
Because a lot of them there do speak like that anyway.
No. Well...
I know nothing of it. That was a cheap guy. I know nothing of the Isle of Man. I went as a kid.
They started trying to communicate with the cause of these scratches. So if you're saying to it, be a cat, and this noise is going, meow... then that's a brilliant cat noise, thank you.
I've heard better.
Then Voiry, or Siobhan, however we're choosing to pronounce a name, got this creature, whatever it was, to repeat nursery rhymes. So what went from growling suddenly became hey diddle diddle.
With diction. So with
diction. Yeah, it found its voice and whatever it was began to speak. So it had consciousness. It had a voice, and once it did all these nursery rhymes, it kind of found its feet and found its voice. And that's when the creature introduced itself as Jeff, spelt G-E-F.
And we know already, because there's been an inherent spoiler here, that Jeff is a mongoose. What I can say at this juncture is that the structural integrity of a mongoose's mouth would not allow for diction.
Oh, okay.
I hate to go all scientific on this. The way it is made up
Yeah.
Would not allow for diction. It can make noises.
Yeah.
It can growl. It can even make something that could sound a bit like a word, maybe, if it growled in a certain way. But it would not be able to have diction in its speech.
Right. This fascinates me. Does a mongoose have lips?
I asked you specifically whether there was diction. I'm not sure. I don't know. Probably, I would have thought.
But dogs don't really have lips, do they? They don't have like...
Dogs do have lips. Yes, they do. Yes.
Do they?
Yeah.
Science.
You've got a dog. Why are you asking me, somebody who doesn't have a dog, if dogs have lips? What are you stating to me? Dogs don't have lips. Have a dog. Look at its lips.
I have spoken to it a lot. Her, you know, I've spoken to her a lot. Yeah. And never once has she ever mimicked me or tried to talk back. And it's not for want of trying.
Yeah.
So I'm just seeing if there's any physiological issues there.
They have what would be described as lips.
Yes.
But if you mean can they form those lips into a way that would provide diction? I mean, diction is a lot of things together. No, diction...
Dogs can't whistle.
Correct. We're all about the big straws? Announcements on loopholes this week, aren't we?
Oh, is it spiders? I can't remember.
Right. They can't whistle, but they could whistle by accident. So they could be like asleep or whatever and wheezing and it would make whistle noise. Yeah, that could happen. But they would not be able to themselves shape their mouth into the way that would be required. And this applies to mongooses as well, or mongai. This would apply to all of them.
Yeah.
That they're not able to shape their mouths into the required positions, and their tongue and the opening of the mouth and their vocal cords. Yeah. They can't apply the dexterity required that we do without even thinking. Most people in the human race can do to talk.
Yeah, I don't think you've remembered this very well, Ian, but this isn't just any mongoose.
No,
this is extra special mongoose.
Well, then I would go further and say that this is not a mongoose at all.
Excellent theory. We get into that later. So, Jeff, with his lovely working lips and vocal cords, says that he is from Delhi in India, and he's travelled all the way to the Isle of Man. And he is, I quote, an extra clever mongoose. So I think that clears up
his
words. Lip debate. Yes.
He says that, right?
Yeah. So he gets more and more talkative. So that proves you wrong, your theories. And
like the Brady one in Gremlins 2. Bit full of itself as well. And
he ends up having full conversations, but he also had preferences. So while he liked Siobhan and Jim, he didn't like Margaret, the mother, that much. And in some instances, he even pelted her with stones later on down the line. So,
and just to clarify, this is all through a wall, this?
Yeah.
It's not like sat in the armchair with a pipe.
No.
Musing beside the fireplace.
They hadn't seen it yet. Speaking of which, their parents, Siobhan's parents, saw little glimpses of Jeff, but never saw Jeff in full. Whereas their daughter saw it and conversed with it person to mongoose.
Right. Okay, well, we're narrowing down the field now, aren't we?
Jeff was, it was very, very helpful in the farmhouse.
Yeah.
So he'd remind people when they'd left things on. He'd be a bit of a guard dog of sorts. But he wasn't fixed to the farmhouse. He wasn't like a fixed poltergeist or anything. He'd travel round the Isle of Man. He sort of hitched rides with neighbours and then would return back to the farmhouse with, you know, news of the mainland and gossip.
Unbeknownst
and...
to the neighbours, this is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And
I'd like to keep a tally of the abilities. So at the moment, we have got...
Lips.
Full diction and talking.
Yeah.
Shyness, if we can count that as an ability.
Yeah.
And X-ray vision. through walls.
And ability to travel unimpeded. And he loved newspapers. Now, Jeff was... quite polite sometimes, so he would announce his presence to the family by calling Jim or Margaret by their names. So you'd hear a little voice going, "Jim, I'm back from town."
Right.
Maybe not in that accent, I don't know.
I know I'm interrupting you a lot, but
yeah,
this has been like whirling around my head for a few seconds now, and I do have to actually say it.
Yeah.
We're speaking remotely, so we're on Zoom at the minute, talking to each other. Can you clarify for me, did you say newspapers?
Oh, God.
As in, like, hangman's noose.
We're not having this again.
Did you, though? Is that how you said it?
I don't know how I pronounce anything anymore.
That's the argument that Jeff gave when he was caught. I know it shouldn't work, but I can't.
How do I say newspaper? Newspaper. Newspaper.
Newspaper.
Newspaper.
Okay. It's what you say how you want to. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say newspaper before.
Yeah, I bought my necklace from the newspaper.
Oh, I hate when you say necklace.
Right, well, it's how I say it, so I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry.
That's all I wanted. That was all I wanted.
I'm not. I've been tricked again. You trickster. Back to Jeff. Jeff has great hearing. So he'll involve himself in conversations. But if you try and whisper so Jeff can't hear you, he not only knows you're whispering, but he'll announce that you are, and then he'll repeat back what you said to prove that you can't hide anything.
Full diction, super hearing.
Yes. Jeff. Oh, another ability. Jeff was a very good huntsman. He would bring the family gifts of rabbits, dead ones. Mm. At a certain point, just on the outskirts of their land, where he'd strangled rabbits to death, his own words, he strangled them, and then left them for the family to cook and eat, and they'd reward him with offcuts, bits of sausages, bits of fruit, odds and sods. So it was a very well-fed, extra special mongoose.
That they never saw.
He's also very fond of singing.
Okay.
So add that to the list. Lovely voice. Mm. And he had quite a nice varied repertoire. So he'd sing the Manx anthem, he'd sing a variety of hymns, folk songs, some of which were Spanish. He'd also like singing Home on the Range.
Right.
Which I thought was quite a nice choice for a mongoose. But he also would sing some quite bawdy, rude songs, to which Margaret finally said, "That's not very appropriate for a small furry animal to be singing." And she said, "Jeff, you're not an animal." Because, of course, that's the big giveaway, isn't it? And Jeff, in response, said, "No, of course I'm not. I am the Holy Ghost."
Wow.
So this made them think, Jeff's blaspheming now. We've got a bad spirit here. And at this point, Jeff started showing that while he was an extra special talented mongoose, he had one hell of a temper. He would insult the family all the time. Like I said, he threw stones at Margaret. He broke things around the house. And at this point, newspapers began to report on what was happening at Cashin's Gap.
Imagine if this is all true, if this was really happening.
Yes.
Imagine existing within that environment. Mm. So imagine, because I think there's a lot of, when you hear stories like this, you always think about it's someone else. It's their house. So you don't actually think about the full implication of this sort of situation. So if this is what was happening at the moment, we only have the testimony of the people who were there to tell us that, first off. We have lots of flaws in the story, of course, but the fact that they're all going along with it would imply that they're either educationally subnormal or they're all in on it. That they're the two assessments that I would make of it. But let's say, for argument's sake, that this was, that what they said was happening was what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Why has nobody at any point in this gone, "You're all winding me up"? Why, like, if you put it into a realistic scenario, right? So if I put that into my, when I was growing up, so as a kid, right? Myself, my parents, my brother, right? So there's four of us in the house. If this was going on in the house and my brother was claiming that there was a mongoose behind a wall who was talking and all this sort of stuff, and that he'd seen it as well.
Yeah.
Definitely me. Definitely my dad. Potentially not my mum. But would have definitely gone, "Do you think I'm stupid? I'm not even playing. This is ridiculous. You're clearly trying to wind me up and it's not going to work."
Well, it was quite an isolated place and there wasn't that much to do. So you'd be very thankful for a bit of a mongoose champ.
But the first thing I would do, if I was sat in a room with everybody accounted for, so if everyone was accounted for, right? So again, within my family, mum and dad, me and my brother, if everyone was accounted for,
yeah,
We were in the living room and there was something talking behind a wall or singing Home on the Range, right?
Yeah.
It would have been a race between me and my dad to who got a sledgehammer first. To see what it was. We'd have looked around the back. If we didn't get a definitive answer by just looking or doing it in a civilised way, that wall would have been caved in to see what it was. And whoever was then found guilty of what had been doing it, they would be in big trouble at that point. But I suspect, as the sledgehammer was in the midst of being swung, someone would have gone, oh, fine, it's a joke. I don't understand why they would have been playing along with it, if indeed they were what they recall and regale of that time is correct.
Well,
that's my loophole, that's what it's about.
Well, there's more to come. More interesting things to come. So
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember what this story is, so this is fascinating.
With the newspaper reports.
For hung. No further news. What do you expect from a newspaper?
Hot on the heels of the bits
Gallows
of paper.
Gallows of the week.
That announced what happened. Came two familiar names. Well, three, really. So, first of all, let's have a check-in with Harry Price, our old favourite Harry Price. Well, Harry and a writer called Richard Lambert travelled to Cashin's Gap to report on it. And
this is celebrity ghost hunter Harry Price.
Yes, yeah. And
at the
he produced a very short booklet on it called The Haunting of Cashin's Gap.
An olden days of Yvette Fielding.
Yes, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And so he didn't come down on either side of it because, of course, really straight debunkings don't sell that many copies. But he did say that the house was built like double layered. So it was basically like one long speaking tube. So sound travelled weirdly within the house. And this is when we start getting the first potential, at least written, implications of potential ventriloquism at play.
Yeah.
Maybe by their daughter, Voiri / Siobhan.
Yeah.
So Harry Price is the one that's mainly reported as being the main guy that investigated the Jeff the Mongoose thing because he made this little booklet. But also Nandor Fodor, who is the subject of the new film, who was also the research officer for the International Institute of Psychical Research, he went over for a week to stay with the family, stay with the Irving family, see if he could see Jeff or communicate with Jeff himself. Surprise, he didn't see Jeff at all. But he did interview the family and a lot of locals, and he came down as sort of believing in it. And he found the Irvings to be sincere and frank, simple people.
I'll agree with one of those things.
And he said that deliberate deception on the part of the whole family cannot be entertained as a solution of the mystery. So he said, they're all decent people. They wouldn't pretend to be a magical mongoose.
What sort of investigation is that?
And he eliminated...
How can you eliminate something that could have been happening? Just because you've been fooled, you can't definitively say that. What's striking off that person? That's ridiculous.
He said that he sort of debunked the ventriloquism idea because Jeff could be heard when each member of the family had been sort of alternately eliminated. So one by one, they'd be observed and there was no ventriloquism at play, supposedly.
But I'm not doubting. But you can't definitively say something without backing it up with any facts whatsoever. You can't just go, no, they're telling the truth. Why? Because I'm telling you, they're very convincing. So it can't be that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, Fodor was big in, let's say, poltergeist development and poltergeist theories. And he put forward the idea that poltergeists were manifestations of internal mental conflict. So they weren't spirits of the undead.
I don't care what he said. He is questionable. No, he is. And this is the issue with all of this.
Yeah.
There are so many people within this sphere, and it's happening to this day too. There are so many people within the sphere who are acting clever. They're acting like they're smart. They're putting together a public persona that they're really smart and they're scientifically minded. Ergo, when they say something supernatural, it carries more clout because it's like, well, they're really clever, that person. Because they know, by the way, that the people they're preaching to are the sort that will respond to thinking somebody is clever. They will. They'll be like, dead clever, that bloke. Dead clever, that lass. I'm listening to what they're saying. Yet, when you actually look at what they're doing and their methods and all that, they're not clever at all. Which can only lead me to believe that they are, at best, have some sort of bias towards it, and at worst, are absolute charlatans themselves.
Well, Nandor Fodor believed that it probably was an animal. But in 1952, he went over his findings again, and he changed his mind. He then went on to say that, yes, Jeff was probably still an animal.
Right.
But an animal that had been psychically possessed by a, I quote, split-off part of Jim Irving's personality.
It's so a buffoon.
It was sort of like...
He's an absolute buffoon. He's a buffoon or a dead-eyed ambitious person. That it can only be one of those two things. That's it. That's definitive. Mm-hmm. It can only be one of those two things. I don't need to back it up with facts. We've established that as a precedent.
Well, the Irving family didn't stay there forever. And Jim, Margaret and Voirie moved back to the mainland in about 1936.
So this film that's coming out, so is it about the mongoose or is it about this bloke, this buffoon, this... either buffoon or dead-eyed ambitious buffoon, as I've already decided. Is the film about the dead-eyed ambitious bloke, or is it about the mongoose? What is it?
I think it's about Nandor Fodor.
Right.
As depicted by Simon Pegg.
Well, that figures then. It's not much of a stretch of his acting ability, is it? Right, go on.
Jesus. Right, not even so acting. In 1936... the family left. The Irving family left to go back to the mainland. And the next family moved in. Nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff travelled from Delhi to the Isle of Man, but not to the mainland. That was a stretch too far. But he said nothing. Maybe just stayed quiet, went back to mongoose slumber for the next family. And then the family after that, in 1947, caught and killed... some kind of similar creature. It looked like a cross between a ferret and a weasel, something a little bit mongoosey. They put that forward that maybe we have caught and killed Jeff.
Yeah. Or a mongoose.
But, you know, that was Jeff. He proclaimed that he was the eighth wonder of the world.
How many years later was that, by the way? Tell me those dates again.
That was, well, they left in 1936.
Yeah.
And the mongoose was killed in 1947. Well, not the mongoose, the creature was killed in 1947.
So 11 years. Is that, I don't know what the lifespan is of a mongoose.
Consulting Dr. Internet.
Yeah.
The mongoose, on average, lives 10 years in the wild and up to 17 years in human care.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long do they live when they're locked in a wall cavity? Can you tell me that?
Maybe somewhere in the middle, shall we say?
Is 11 years pushing it, would we say? Presuming that it started talking at birth.
Maybe Jeff lived and died within those hollow walls.
I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not, I don't, you know, I don't mean to ruin this by talking sense.
Yeah. Well, if I can I leave you with one of Jeff's most... wondrous quotes, just showing how eloquent and educated he was for an extra special mongoose.
As long as you promise that you will actually go.
He said, "I am a freak. I have hands and I have feet. And if you saw me, you'd faint. You'd be petrified, mummified, turned into stone or a pillar of salt." R.I.P. Jeff.
Wow, Simon Pegg is brilliant casting. I'm just getting my own back on him because he was rude to me at a TV recording once. Well, there we go. Loopholes, episode 39. One of the things that offends me the most about Jeff the Mongoose, that story, is that they spell Jeff G-E-F.
Well, he picked it, not me.
I don't like that part of it. It's almost like a child tried to write the name, innit?
whoa, have we just split this case wide open?
Who knows? I'm worried about losing people that might be, you know, supporters of my work, but also like Simon Pegg. You can like what you want. I'm sorry. This is a personal thing over one night. That's all it is. Never met him before or since, so I might be being unkind.
Well, on that note, have you met the Dolby Spook? Have you gone to the Isle of Man recently? Did you see any suspicious rodents running around?
We're at episode 39, Kate. We're at episode 39, and you do this every week, and not one person has ever answered any of these questions. Not once. They've left loads of comments. Very kind. They've been very supportive. But no one has ever answered the questions you say at this point because they're stupid.
Look, let me
have you met the Dolby ghost? No, I'm pretty sure no one has.
I need this.
Okay, fine, go on.
Is your name Voiry? Get in touch.
I'll just say
and
it.
You can do...
Type it out phonetically for me, please.
Yeah, there's some great books out there. There's a great book called Jeff by Christopher Joseph, which I recommend everyone read.
I'm sure people have made a fortune out of it, I'm certain.
But there's no pronunciation guide, so we've all been let down. And you can tell us more fascinating facts about how you pronounce ordinary words via many different means.
Wow.
You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/IanBoldsworth, at patreon.com/burialsandbeyond.
You don't need to bother with mine. You can hear the mood I'm in at the moment. I'm like this all the time.
You can find us on Twitter at loopholespod, and you can send us an email to loopholespodcast@gmail.com. What a wonderful little list of things. Head on over there. I've been Kate Cheryl. Thank you very much for listening.
And I've been Grumpy Ian Boldsworth.
Love you lots. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Boldsworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Boldsworth.